This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's reading comes from Exodus chapter 1, verse 10. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply, and if war breaks out, they join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land. So, come, let us deal shrewdly with them, whoever they are, we will deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply. And I'm just going to read the entire verse again. Anyway, I'm Ryan, and this is Scripture Read Badly.
And I'm Jeremy, and I love dealing shrewdly with people. And we are very heavily into the first chapter of Exodus. We discussed it a lot
so
in our last episode with the background and some thoughts around what it is and where it's going. And today we're just going to go straight into it. It is very much more of the telling of the story of Israel, and very much into the family line that explains where they've come from and where they're going, which is quite important to, Israel as a whole. And I am very curious about the line that says that the king did not know Joseph, because one of the kings died, and so the new king doesn't know the story of Joseph. So I wonder what that meant for what Israel was doing at the time and how big they were and why he doesn't know. Like, how disconnected from the Israelites were the political elite at the time?
Yeah, so this whole, the first chapter, this whole book begins with, like you said, kind of recounting the descendants of Jacob. So it says that all the sons went with Jacob into Egypt, and then Joseph was already in Egypt. Then Joseph died, and we did see that at the end of Genesis, I think. Let me just flip back. Yeah, the death of Joseph. So there's a little bit of an overlap here, and as I asked the question last week, I'm going to re-ask it. Do you think this is to blend, kind of blur the lines between the poetic narrative of Genesis and the more historical narrative of Exodus, to have this paragraph or so of overlap?
Yeah, but I think the end, at least, of Genesis was almost already blurring those lines, because it did show the generations moving in, and then now this is showing how many people were in Israel with that line, they multiplied and grew exceedingly strong so that the land was filled with them.
Oh, you're reading from the ESV.
Yeah, what are you reading from?
ESV. That's how I knew.
Yeah, it's the excellent standard version.
Sure is. So the Israelites bred like rabbits and filled the land.
Yep.
We've seen the size of the country of Egypt on world maps. It would not have been like that. The confines of its borders now are different to what the confines of its borders were back then. I don't even know if there were borders for it, except for maybe getting down towards Ethiopia and stuff. But we have an understanding that there were less people in the world back then. So when it says they multiplied exceedingly and filled the land, we are assuming that that doesn't mean that you couldn't swing a cat without hitting three or four Israelites. It was more like everywhere that you went, there were settlements of Hebrews throughout the land of Egypt. And we don't really know how big that was. Especially since there's no historical agreement about when exactly this happened. So,
and where.
And where?
Because it could be focusing on one part of Egypt, or it could be the entirety of what Egypt was back then. And there's comments on that, but they had multiplied enough that the king of one of these big ancient civilizations was feeling awkward about how many people had been born. and that they may raise and, up and take over.
Yeah, and it's a king that you said who did not know Joseph.
Yeah.
So I don't really know if that means that he was maybe the great grandson of the king that did, and maybe the grandson knew Joseph and he was like, yeah, this is old dude Joseph who was really cool and a really influential person and has made our economy thrive.
Yeah.
But then his son only knows him secondhand because Joseph died during that time. Or if it was, if we're actually thinking logically, not doing what I just did, then you consider it's 430 years later, right? So I guess that means everyone was dead.
But I also
there goes what I just said.
This king was a violent overthrow of the last kings, and so he wouldn't have known. And maybe
right, so he wouldn't have even heard the stories that were passed.
Yeah, and maybe he's not even Egyptian. Maybe he just takes over Egypt and becomes Egypt because he controls it.
Wow.
And okay. That would make sense if it's just one area of Egypt instead of the entirety of that land.
Hmm. Wow, I have not considered that before.
Me neither, until just
it
then.
It was an overthrow. Wow. Well, that's what this is for. It's partly for us to externally process and ask questions. Yeah. And almost entirely for the listener's benefit. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We want you to participate as well. Not just us. We don't really want to be the sole voices of dumb questions in the universe. But if we have to be, then we will.
Yeah, definitely.
If that is our lot in life. Great. So then Pharaoh says this thing, come let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they where have I heard that before? Anyway, so he says that to his attendants probably, or his generals or something.
Yep.
And then it was at that moment that they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with heavy burdens.
Yep.
So I believe what God said to Jacob in Genesis was, your descendants will be strangers in a foreign land for 400 years.
Yeah.
I don't think he said that they will be enslaved, like I said last episode.
Yeah.
So I was wrong. Sorry, guys. But I think that's interesting to note that they were not enslaved until this king took power.
Yeah.
Then he set taskmasters over them, and at that exact same time was when he murdered that whole generation of boys.
Yep.
So that's pretty, pretty interesting, I think, to realize that when Moses grew up, whatever that means, when he saw the Hebrew get whipped or whatever, and he killed the Egyptian in chapter 2, not wanting to get too far ahead, but it just says that one day when Moses had grown up. So we don't really know how old he was then, though we do get a look at it later on when it's talking about he was there for 40 years and he was 40 years old when he left, blah, blah, blah. But so then that's probably the 30 years tacked on the end of the 400 where they have been enslaved. Yeah. So that's good to note. And again, I want to reiterate that there was an entire generation of boys murdered.
Yep.
Brutally by Pharaoh, and it was in order to cripple the future of Israel.
Yeah.
So that in the future, when there were even more of them, although there would be less because there were less people to actually have kids, that they, like you said last time, their leadership was very frail because they were either old or really young.
Yep.
So, yes, really.
Or just unequipped.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that,
especially if they've been enslaved for 30 years.
Yeah, exactly. But then verse 12, it says, but the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and the more they spread abroad. And I wonder if that's just because,
like cane toads.
Yeah, they had so much hope and they knew that this was going to happen beforehand that they were like, who cares? This is what God said would happen. Let's do this. Promised land coming up.
Yeah, and the fact that everyone that went to Egypt were direct descendants of Abraham means that they have grown up their entire lives hearing the promises passed down from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob and their fathers about their future of being this great nation.
Yeah.
And that their descendants would outnumber the stars or match the stars or whatever. So I think it's good to keep in mind that the Israelites had the same vision. They believed the promise of God that they would have a great many descendants, and they were kind of doing their duty, maybe,
yep,
in helping to achieve that by having lots of kids. And so then the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread abroad. So that kind of reminds me of what happened to the early church when they were oppressed in Rome.
Yep.
The fact that they had to go underground and they wanted to get the gospel out there, people went crazy spreading the gospel, especially under oppression. And you see that in modern day areas like the Middle East and Asia in some parts, and all that type of thing. Anywhere that there is a lot of persecution of Christians, the gospel is likely to spread in abundance. So that's kind of the same type of thing that we see here, that when the Israelites were persecuted, they spread out, they scattered.
Yeah.
And when they scattered, they formed families in these new places, and they established themselves again, and then when they were persecuted, they spread even more. So then that's just showing that when Joseph was given his choice land in Goshen, that was kind of their home base, that was their country, and then they outgrew that, and then they spread. So then Pharaoh's whole plan to squash them and make sure that there wasn't a rebellion kind of backfired, because suddenly his palace was surrounded by all these little groups of Israelites everywhere. So that's good to remember, that his plan did backfire, and it made it seem like there were even more Hebrews,
yeah,
than there were before he actually afflicted them. So yes, I thought I'd throw that out there.
That's a good throwing.
Thanks. So what do you think he made the Israelites do when they were working as slaves? It's said that he made their lives bitter with hard service in mortar and brick, and in all kinds of work in the field, and in all their work they ruthlessly made them work as slaves. So I know that the Prince of Egypt has depicted this kind of as them building great monuments to the Pharaoh and the pyramids and things, but I think aliens built the pyramids, and I don't know who built the monuments, but it probably wasn't the Israelites.
Whoa, what do aliens? You think?
I'm kidding.
I think...
Or am I?
They built... They built for Pharaoh store cities, and if that's the case, then if they're working in the fields, then he would need store cities, so maybe they were just building, like, big barns and big government buildings.
Which is kind of what Joseph told them to do.
Yeah.
He advised Pharaoh to build storehouses to store all their grain. So then if Pharaoh is even unknowingly causing the exact opposite result of what was happening and causing death and that type of thing from building these storehouses that Joseph intended to, yep, and God intended to create life, then I think sustain life, then that's pretty interesting to see that that opposite contrast parallel thing going on.
Yeah, but I wonder if because they've multiplied and because the Egyptians would have multiplied too, if they just needed more food, so they needed to update their storehouses, and he just used the people to do that.
Yeah.
Especially if he has taken over, then he'd need to set up some stuff.
Look, if we know anything from real life, it's that when cities are expanding, you need way more tradies.
Yeah.
You need bricklayers, you need plenty of other people
plumbers,
doing
you need sparkies.
Plumbing,
you
carpentry, need sparkies, mechanics. Yeah. Garbos. Need plenty of garbos.
Heaps of garbos.
Yeah, so
and
there were probably
not the
some
funnest work ever.
Hebrew garbos
back in the day.
No. Probably not. Just need a especially horse and not cart. When their only perfume was, as we determined last season, smoke from fire.
Oh, that's a good perfume.
So, yeah. If you like that type of thing.
Mix
I guess
that
if you're used
grass.
To it.
Then,
yeah, okay. So, then the king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shiphrah, and the other Puah, When you serve as midwife to the Hebrew women and see them on the birthstool, if it is a son, you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, she shall live. And you kind of hinted at this in the verse of the day last episode, but the midwives refuse.
Yep.
And they let the Hebrew boys live. So a number of different movie adaptations of this story have depicted this as the Hebrew boys getting thrown in the Nile and eaten by crocodiles and things.
Yep.
But here Pharaoh's actually instructing the midwives to do it.
Well, that would make sense because they're close to everything. And then they can't hide actually the boys
scratch
away.
That. The last verse of chapter 1. I'm sure people are laughing. Last verse of chapter 1 says, because the Hebrew women didn't do it, because the midwives didn't do it, every son that is born you shall cast into the Nile.
Yeah.
So,
but that was after they refused.
True. That's something that we haven't seen in movie adaptations. It's always immediately throwing the boys in the river instead of seeing that there were actually kids that these midwives that were instructed to kill them let live.
Yep.
And so that's interesting that God deals favorably with these midwives that lie to authority. When you consider what Jesus says when he's saying things like, you must submit to authority and pray for those in leadership and blah, blah, blah. If it's something like this, I think we have many, many accounts throughout the Bible of when people did things that were quote-unquote illegal in the eyes of the authorities, but ultimately led to life and salvation and beauty coming into the world. And the persecuted church is all, it's all about that. People were getting thrown into the Colosseum and killed, but at the same time, that made their numbers spread and they continued to meet in secret and spread the good news of Jesus until ultimately there was this big Constantinople thing and it was crazy. But yes, that's, what are your thoughts on that? On lying to authority if it is for ultimately the purposes of God?
Yeah, I'm all about that. I'm all about life and goodness. But I wonder also how many birth mothers would have just given birth in private so that they wouldn't even have to involve the midwives. But then at the same time, I suppose if the Egyptian people were watching them, you can't really hide a pregnancy all that great back in the day.
Yeah.
But I wonder how many women tried. And then I wonder how many women just decided not to have kids for a large amount of time just because they were worried that their child would be killed.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. So we don't really know how long this went on either.
Yeah.
Because we know that at the time of the birth of Moses, this was still happening. But then halfway through chapter 2, it just says, one day when Moses had grown up, blah, 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 blah. And then things are apparently different.
Yeah.
We don't know if Pharaoh's instruction lasted the rest of the time they were in Egypt.
Yeah.
So there was just no boys. But that's not very likely because there are people mentioned when they're in the wilderness. There's a whole bunch of sons of so-and-so and they're the chiefs of the different tribes and stuff. There's all these men listed within 5 to 10 years of them leaving Egypt. So it has to be that sometime Pharaoh stopped this killing boys genocide.
Or maybe another Pharaoh took over. Like maybe there was multiple pharaohs in that time because Moses was away for a bit. And maybe the rest of the pharaohs weren't so
bloodthirsty. It says at the end of chapter 2, during those many days the king of Egypt died and the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help.
Yep.
So there's a new king, but apparently that king isn't much better than his predecessor. But it's possible that that at that time, so it says during those many days, the king of Egypt died. And that's when Moses went to Midian and he was there for 40 years. So,
and 40 years is quite a long time for some of these kings.
Very, very long time. I mean, if you consider the amount of years that some of the later kings of Israel ruled.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of them were only in power for less than a year. Some of them were in power for 8 years.
Yep.
And then they died. Some of them were in power for 40 years. So, given the fact that this story is based on the Hebrews,
yep,
or at least from the Hebrew perspective for Hebrews, we don't get a lot of information about these different Egyptian kings or anything like that. However, I did find that there was some speculation within the Midrash, that's the original Jewish commentaries on the Torah, that say that they think Pharaoh's daughter that adopted Moses was Queen Bithia.
Ooh.
And I don't know when that was. I don't know when she was. However, that is... that's just one of many, many theories about who it was that adopted Moses and all that.
Tell me more about because this Midrash.
Oh, yeah. So, in Hebrew... Jewish traditions going way, way back to when the Torah was written... It was during the writings of the prophets and things that these teachers of the law... Can you hear that bird outside my window?
Yeah, I can hear that bird. That's a cool bird.
Yeah. For you non-Australians out there, you'll probably have never heard a bird that sounds like that. But it's true.
It's giant. It's like true. 6 foot tall.
And they eat lambs. Just little lambs.
It's pretty cute.
Yeah, like Jeremy. Jeremy loves to eat lambs.
I do love lamb. That's not even a lie.
Yeah, so the Midrash is actually the genre of rabbinic literature, which contains early interpretations and commentaries on the Torah, both the oral and the written.
Yeah.
And I'm totally not reading this off Wikipedia right now. and it also contains the non-legalistic rabbinic literature known as the Agadah.
Ooh.
And occasionally the Jewish religious laws, the halacha. I'm great at pronouncing my Hebrew words.
Is that a C-H-A?
No, it's a K-H-A.
Ooh, hello.
Halacha. Yeah. Anyway, so what it is it's basically a very, very long amount of commentaries, as it said, written and oral, passed down throughout the years that accompany the Torah. And I had to read a book, and I don't remember what it was called. Maybe someone out there knows. But it was this book of this this Jewish teenager that was growing up in New York, who was a Hasidic Jew. And he had to study the Talmud, which is basically the same. It's part of the Midrash, I think. It's the commentaries about the law and the prophets and things. So he had to study what this particular Pharisee or whatever said about this other one's commentary on this other one's commentary on this passage of scripture. And he had to memorize all that stuff and study them, study these commentaries of commentaries. And that was eventually what they have become. And in some ways it's really beautiful because you really dig down really deep into these texts.
Yep.
And then in some ways they kind of miss the mark. And that's just like any other commentaries on books or movies or even what we're doing now. We're providing a commentary for the listeners about these types of things. And if someone hears what we say, and like what you said with maybe Pharaoh was some other king that overthrew the last one, then if someone hears that and then shares that with someone else, and then they share that with someone else, and they kind of have their own take on it, then it's that type of thing, but with a lot of people actually studying it, so more than just six people listening to the podcast, so it actually gaining momentum and becoming this prevailing theory.
Yep.
So that's kind of what the Midrash is. It's all these different commentaries and things, and what people think about what, and these different views from traditions going way, way back.
Yeah.
So they think that Queen Bithia was the one that adopted Moses. And I'll just pull up Queen Bithia, Egypt.
But when we miss the mark, we only miss the mark like 85% of the time.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is a better ratio for most.
Yeah, yeah, it's better than 84. That's right. So,
is Queen Bithia who Cleopatra was based on? Is she famous?
Ooh, I don't know. So it says Bithia, or in quotes, daughter of God,
ooh, hello,
was an Egyptian princess and a daughter of Pharaoh, according to the Old Testament. So it looks as though this is kind of the portrayal of this queen, as if she's the one that gets credited with this, even though we don't really know much about her. So she's referenced in religions, yep, not necessarily in historical texts. Okay. So that makes it a little bit hard. But a daughter of Pharaoh named Bithia is mentioned in 1 Chronicles 4:18, if you want to look that up. You don't have to. The Midrash identifies the two as the same person.
Yep.
And says she received her name literally daughter of Yah, Yah being Yahweh, because of her compassion and pity in saving the infant Moses.
Oh, so, yeah, I mean, okay. That's cool that she has a name like that.
Yeah. So then we don't know much about any of these pharaohs, which ones they were. We don't know much about who the daughter of Pharaoh was. But if she was Bithia, if this person actually existed, that's pretty cool because she sounds like a legit lady.
Yep.
But then the problem comes in with there being not really any historical text to support this whatsoever.
And it doesn't really change much if we did know.
No, no, that's right. And so maybe it is this millennia-long conspiracy that Egyptians were covering up their greatest downfall.
Exactly.
Boom. Something like that. But according to the Bible, we don't hear much about Egypt for many, many years. Probably until around the time of David.
Yeah.
When we hear about the Egyptian champion that Benaiah kills with the Egyptian's own spear and that type of thing. So we don't really hear much about Egypt, but I could be wrong because I'm not a theologian.
Me neither. Although I don't really know what that is.
Later.
What's a theologian?
Yeah, what is it? Somebody that studies God.
I study God. You study God.
All right, then maybe we are theologians. Boom, we're theologians. We've been lying this whole time. All right, there you go. We don't need any kind of degree
we don't in need theology
to study God. That's right.
I mean, yes, we do.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're getting back to the end of chapter 1 of Exodus, and all the boys are being thrown into the Nile, and it's really easy for us, having grown up with this Sunday school picture of all these stories, to not really get grossed out or freaked out about what it must have been like. And I kind of hinted at that in the last episode talking about the plagues, but for real, having all these little babies thrown into the Nile River and drowned or eaten by crocodiles or hippos or whatever, it's so crazy.
Yep.
So crazy. And so something that I don't know if I will do this very often, but I want to try and get in the habit of occasionally saying, all right, just stop, close your eyes, and picture this.
Yep.
Your wife has just had a baby, and things have just started getting a little bit weird with the Egyptians. They've started trying to enslave you, and you have a legitimate job, and you're thriving in your life, and you're having lots of kids. But then suddenly, you have three older kids who are in the next room or whatever, and your wife has a kid. And then right away, in storms these Egyptians, and they take the baby son from the arms of your screaming wife. And this is really sad and dark, but then they just rip the baby away, take it down to the Nile and toss it in.
Yep.
And so you never, ever get to see your son grow up. You never, ever get to see him take his first steps or anything like this. This is horrible. This is completely, it's destroying the nation of Israel.
Yep.
Emotionally. So then you consider that the subsequent years of this are complete slavery, where you are no longer respected as a farmer or whatever you were doing. Now you're enslaved. And so you're either getting way less than what you originally got, or you're getting nothing and having to make it up on your own time. And you're having to lay bricks. You've never laid bricks before. You're not strong enough. Whatever it is, it's just terrible, terrible work conditions. It's the ultimate sweatshop.
Mm-hmm.
And then in comes Moses' parents in chapter 2 of Exodus. So that was just to paint the picture, give you a little bit of context of what's happening here. And it's just strictly from what is there in the text. It's just the matter of opening it up a little bit, using your imagination, something that is sometimes really hard to do with some of the dry text that you read in the Bible. But I think if we make it a habit of trying to get inside the heads of the people that are experiencing this, then when we see the salvation of the Lord, it will be so much greater.
Yep.
So, then the beginning of chapter 2 says, a man from the house of Levi went and took as his wife a Levite woman. Now, I know from reading Numbers 26 yesterday that the names of those people, Moses' father's name is Amram, A-M-R-A-M, Hamram. And his mother's name is Jochebed, J-O-C-H-E-B-E-D, Jochebed.
Jochebed.
Well, it's probably Jochebed or something like that. But I don't speak Hebrew. And if you do speak Hebrew, then please don't refer me to anywhere that I can touch up on it, because I'm really, really not that interested. But good for you.
But I wonder why they didn't put the names in this book.
I don't think it's really necessary for driving the narrative. And true. We see that because not many details are given until Moses is a lot older.
Yeah.
So maybe it is that just throwing in another name would be confusing. However, with that said, nevertheless, nonetheless, all these different words mean the same thing. The Hebrew midwives, whose names were Shifra and Puah, were actually mentioned by name,
yep.
And Moses' parents weren't. So what the heck is happening there? Maybe it's just to show that there is a legacy for maintaining the cause of God when there is extreme opposition. That God will bless you. So yeah. It's wanting to list them by name because they did a righteous thing. Maybe that's it. What do you think?
Or maybe their names mean something poetic. That sometimes happens.
Oh, maybe. I wonder.
I didn't look that up. Did you just start your own motorbike up?
I've got one here in my room. So
what else did I write?
Yes, so it. In my ESV study Bible, which is fantastic, it says, the narrative names so few people, not even naming the pharaohs, that it is probably a further display of the narrator's approval of the women's deeds that he gives their names Shifra and Pua.
Ah, there you go.
A detail unnecessary for describing the events themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The faithfulness of the midwives is also an indication that there were those among the people of Israel who feared God after all the years of enslavement, and before there was any knowledge of God's call of Moses.
Yep.
The exemplary actions of the midwives signify a central theme of the book of Exodus. Israel is called to fear God above any other ruler, nation, or circumstance. So there you go. I've just learned something and been inspired just from Shifra and Pua.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to name my first two daughters Shifra and Pua.
I'm not sure your wife will approve of that, but you can try.
Yeah, probably not. Maybe I'll go for a middle name.
Ooh, that'd be safer.
Or at the very least, a nickname.
Or just get a dog and call it both names.
Whoa, yes. Or two female dogs. And then when other dogs are having a litter of pups, then they can save them all. And
whoa, there you go.
Lie to me. Anyway, so that's a little bit weird. But then, so we see that Moses is a Levite, which is significant because Aaron being a Levite is super important later on.
Yep.
Because Aaron becomes the head of the Levites, and then the entire tribe of the Levites have this priestly calling on them because of Aaron. So that's pretty insane that God even lined it up so that the tribe that he wanted to be completely dedicated to him was the tribe that he picked the deliverer out of.
Yep.
So, yep, that's cool. Super cool. So the woman conceived and bore a son. So that was Jochebed, conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him 3 months. So do you think if he wasn't a fine child, she wouldn't have?
Yeah, she's just like, ew, gross. He looks like his dad too much. Get in there!
No, that's so sad and maybe dark it was
that
weird.
During that 3 months, a lot of children just naturally die or are sickly. And he ended up being a healthy child, so she was like, this is the goods. Let's put him in a basket.
Yeah, well, that does kind of make sense because up until, what, the 1950s or something, the childbirth life expectancy was not that great.
Nope.
Right? There was children dying in their early at an early age all the time. So that's why a lot of people had a lot of kids.
Yep.
So that they made sure that they had kids when some of them didn't make it. And it's a completely different mindset to what we have today. But I guess that makes sense that she saw that he was going to make it.
Yep.
If she took care of him. So when she could hide him no longer, she took for him a basket made of bulrushes. Bulrush, I always thought, was just that game that we'd play, kind of like Red Rover.
Or British Bulldog.
In the backyard. A British Bulldog, yeah. Or are there any other names?
I don't know. Octopus?
Was yeah, kind of like Octopus. Of yeah. Octopus and Sharks and Minnows, for our American listeners, are pretty much the same game. But it's something like that. Except instead of sitting down where you are, you become in as well. Or it. Whatever.
Bulrush. I wonder... Just confusing myself. But, I understand.
So, the bulrush is obviously from the shore of rivers and things.
Yep.
And daubed it with bitumen and pitch.
Ooh, good what use of the word daubed.
I mean, just I like just read it.
Smashed it on.
Yep. And so, bitumen and pit. So, she's basically turning these bulrushes into a road. I meant pitch, not pit. Bitumen pits were in Genesis.
Pits!
When there was that giant battle of the alliances that had to do with Sodom and Gomorrah and stuff. So then she put the child in it and placed it among the reeds by the riverbank. So she makes for Moses, as Yogi Bear would say, a picnic basket.
Why didn't they call it that? And just sets him in there.
I don't know.
That'd be great.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't have picnics back then, but that's exactly what they were describing.
True.
Maybe they did, they just didn't have a word for it. Or it's a word that doesn't translate very well. Regardless, we see in The Prince of Egypt a fantastic two-dimensional adaptation of the story of the life of Moses up to Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments, made by DreamWorks Animation back in the year 2000 or something.
That was a good year.
It was a good year, it was a good movie, had some great songs. If you know that movie, you know that at this time she was singing, "Hush now, my baby.
Let it go. Let it go."
Nope, wrong company.
It was Let It Go.
Yeah, well, she did let him go into the river.
Yep.
And then Pharaoh's daughter. Oh, sorry. What I was saying about
picnic
the
classes.
Prince of Egypt was that in that movie, it shows the basket going between crocodiles and through the jaws of a hippo and on these crazy big waves and stuff. And I don't really think that's how it would have happened, but it was pretty miraculous that wherever she was, Moses made it to the daughter of Pharaoh. Instead of being drowned in the basket, so she must have done a really good job daubing it.
Yep, she's a good dauber. Professional.
She's a dibber dauber.
I'm wondering how old the princess was, and if she was of childbearing years, had she had many children her own, and if she had, why would she pick up this stranger's baby if she has a lot of her own? Or maybe she couldn't have any of her own, and that's what fueled her compassion, because she really wanted children.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm kind of thinking that it would make sense that she was quite young, because she did say, "Nurse this child for me and then bring him back to me when he's older."
Oh, yep. Unless so she's just maybe like, it was super lazy and doesn't like babies. Yeah.
She goes
back
could
on
be.
My first point.
Yeah, I think I feel like it was Maybe it was in a VeggieTales adaptation of this or something. The princess is like, bring him back to me when he can, like, talk and walk and stuff. Something like that.
Flawless so that's accent.
Yeah.
Very well, Egyptian.
Yeah, I know. So, Miriam, Moses' sister, follows the basket along the riverbank. And I think that's pretty interesting because, from what I understand of the Nile River, some parts of it are probably quite nice and pleasant, but then there are other parts, like depicted in The Prince of Egypt, with hippos and crocodiles and things. You wouldn't really want your child unattended by the shores of a crocodile-infested river.
Yeah.
At least I wouldn't.
Me neither.
So I don't know about Jochebed and Amram. Maybe they were like, well, we're going to lose one child anyway, so maybe Miriam should go down with him or something. I don't know.
Oh, true. But
probably not. Probably not. So then Miriam actually has the audacity, which is funny because we're both recording on Audacity.
Yeah, it's a good program. Download it.
It's free. To approach Pharaoh's daughter and say, hey, you know that baby that you just picked out of the reeds? And just... Oh, got on my motorbike again. And called Moshe or Moses because you drew him from the reeds.
Yep.
Well, I know someone that can take care of him. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. And so then Miriam went and got Jochebed and brought her back.
So odd.
Yeah, it's weird, but also can you imagine how beautifully bittersweet that would be?
Yeah, very much.
At least she would get to nurse her son, who she had just given up for dead.
Yep.
Until he was old enough to walk and talk and probably do his poo-ahs on the toilet and stuff.
Yep.
Without needing to use a shifra.
Classic shifra. Back in the day, that was the top-notch technology.
Yep. That's what you would do. So then Jochebed got to raise Moses until he was older. And then she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter.
Yep.
So it seems as though there was kind of separation there. Maybe Pharaoh's daughter said, all right, I have my mark on this one. This one is mine.
Yep.
She is raising this child for me. Or do you think maybe she brought Jochebed into her courts and had her raise him there?
Well, was she says, like take this child away and I'll give you your wages. True. And if she had taken Moses into the throne at the time, it probably would have gotten killed.
Yeah.
Because I assume Hebrews looked different to Egyptians.
Well, yep. Okay, so that means she was hiding Moses from Pharaoh.
Yep.
Just like Jochebed was. That's so cool. I wonder if she would have gone and visited him every now and then.
Possibly. But then how... She must have hidden him somehow as well, because why wouldn't Egyptians be looking through all of the houses to look for boys every so often? So how did she avoid being... Yeah, that's right. And then, okay, rewind a little bit. What was her dream of putting him in the river? Was it just... let's see if he can get to another country and someone else can take care of him? Or was it, I don't want them to kill him, so I'm just going to put him in the river and see what happens? Or was she hoping that something like this would happen?
Whoa. I don't know. Maybe something inside of her, maybe it was the Holy Spirit, told her that something special was in store for this one.
True.
And that if she gave him up and submitted to what was happening, that God would take care of him.
Yep.
Whether that was that he would find another family or that he would be raised by wolves like Mowgli or something.
Yeah,
I don't
wolves.
know. But it's interesting because Pharaoh's daughter immediately, let's just call her Bithia because she's pretty cool. So Bithia identified him as a Hebrew, so like you said, he must have been noticeably different to the Egyptians. So it doesn't really make sense that he could, even being raised by a Hebrew, he'd see all these Hebrews around and that's his worldview, then suddenly he's around Egyptians all the time. It doesn't make sense that he wouldn't realize that he was a Hebrew.
Yeah. Which is weird with all the adaptations, right?
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to me because all these adaptations have this weird, awkward conversation, the you're adopted conversation, and then he's so shocked and his whole world falls apart. And then suddenly, just like that, he is murdering an Egyptian for whipping a Hebrew?
Yep.
That it just doesn't really make sense that this people that he supposedly grew up hating and being prejudiced against, suddenly he's offended that they're being oppressed.
Yeah.
That kind of switch doesn't really make sense to me.
Nope.
What does make sense is that maybe he always knew he was a Hebrew, always knew that he was different, always knew he was never going to be a contender for the throne, which is something that I think Odin would have benefited from in the Thor movies.
Yeah.
Having, if he told Loki, "You're actually a nice giant, surprise." Sorry for everyone that hasn't seen that 2008 movie, but I just ruined it for
what?
You. So maybe he already knew and he was just given the same privileges because Pharaoh's daughter considered him her son.
Yeah.
And you see adoption, I mean, you obviously see adoption today, but you see adoption throughout history and how people were grafted into the people of Israel. You see that with Ruth and Rahab and everyone, but then wouldn't it make sense that that also happened with the Egyptians?
Hmm, interesting. That
they may not have ever considered him to be of this divine descent,
yep,
like with the Pharaoh, but they probably would have said he's a noble. He, yep, grew up in the house of Pharaoh. He was raised by Bithia. It makes sense
he speaks the language. He knows our things.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. He's part of our culture. He's a celebrity. We watch him on TV every night, like that type of thing. It makes sense that the Egyptians would have been accustomed to that one exception.
Yeah.
Right? Even if he stayed within the courts and no one outside of the courts knew about him.
Yeah.
Because we don't know from this narrative whether people actually know that he's a prince.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't say anywhere. It just says that when he'd grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people.
Yep.
And it doesn't... It would make sense to me that he grew up in the courts and that he didn't interact with the general populace very often.
Yep.
Because then the first time that he supposedly sees these burdens, this oppression in person, he looks this way and that, and then kills an Egyptian.
Yep.
So, I don't know. He must walk and talk like an Egyptian, especially with his arms bent and his elbows looking all funny, like they do in the hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
Because that's how Egyptians walked. Could you imagine? That's so weird. Maybe it was just a phase. Weird. Anyway, it was kind of like their dab of the day.
Oh, the dab is the worst.
The ancient Egyptian dab was that... Everyone at home knows what I'm doing, right? With the arms going one arm up, one arm down,
yep,
kind of like an emu beak. Yeah.
An emu beak.
Maybe that
beak.
Was the dab of the day. Yeah. Great. So he grows older and then Jochebed brings him to Pharaoh's daughter. And if he did grow up the rest of his life inside the palace, then that would have been the last that Jochebed saw of her son.
Yep.
But something to note is that if Jochebed was raising him in secret, still at the behest of Bithia, then Amram, Moses' dad, probably saw him still. And Aaron and Miriam would have known him. So yeah. that does make sense that later on when he goes back to them that they recognize him and they actually have this connection because they did kind of grow up together. Or at least maybe they were 10, 8 years old and then he was a baby.
Yep.
Like in The Prince of Egypt. But if that was the case, then they would have recognized him. They would have known him. Or at least they would have known that they'd known him.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's getting a little bit confusing. So I wonder when Moses was actually named. Because in chapter 2, verse 10, and this is kind of where we'll wrap things up for this episode, then we'll resume the next one when Moses is older. But in verse 10 of chapter 2, it says, "When the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son." So that was when the adoption happened.
Yep.
She named him Moses because she said, "I drew him out of the water." did he only have the name Moses then? Before then, was he just a child? And if that's the case, and he did grow up in secret, then maybe Moses and Miriam and Aaron didn't know that his name was Moses.
Yep.
So maybe when he came back, it took God intervening and appearing to Aaron for Aaron to actually know who this dude was.
Yep.
Maybe that's what happened, because the name and the face wasn't enough.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. All right, well, hopefully that has given everyone some food for thought. If you have any thoughts on this and you want to let us know, that would be awesome. You can let us know on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or you can email us, scriptureadbadly@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail if you want to verbally process, and that's scriptureadbadly on Skype. Ooh. And you just call us, and then it'll automatically send you to voicemail, and we can download that from there, or you can record an MP3 and send it to us. So there are plenty of ways to get in touch with us about this. We'd love to hear what you have to say.
Definitely. And
Jeremy, do you have any closing thoughts on this particular phase of Moses' life?
It would have just been an interesting upbringing. A different way of, like, going from poverty to being possibly a prince.
Right.
And would have given him a real sense of justice, which you see in the rest of his life. But we'll see that in the next episode. So listen to that when it comes out. It'll be great.
Yep. Yep. My name is Ryan, and you can find my writing on anotherunnecessaryblog.wordpress.com.
And I'm Jeremy, and you can find some of my writing at don'teattrash.com.
Mm-hmm. And we will be here next time. Hopefully you will too. And that's it from us.
Yeah, peace out. Remember
to read your Bible, pray every day, and you'll grow.
And eat fruit, and brush your teeth, and have lots of sleep.
All those things help you grow as well. So remember all that. Okay, bye.
See ya.